Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sports Brunch here on this Wednesday, August 22nd, 8 o'clock p.m. on the East Coast. Our intro did not work today, so we're going to skip right over it. Chris, I heard last week when you played the intro, it came in about a minute in, so maybe we get that from the intro again today. As always, my name is Joe Caputo, joined by my co-host, Chris Malicki. Chris, good to be back here.
Yeah, the intro screwed me up last week. He cut in. He might cut in right now, but we'll see. Good to have you back, Joe. How did you think I did last week?
I thought it was a good show. I think you splashed around pretty nicely, and I think you held it down pretty well. I mean, we've heard glimpses of you by yourself.
Welcome to the one and only Brunch Network.
There you go.
Where thousands tune in weekly to listen to our hosts roll out of bed and talk all things sports and gambling. Now, for the guys that help cure all your hangovers.
I guess our guy likes coming in about a minute into the show now. He doesn't like coming in at
kinda,
the top.
I kind of like this. I hope this becomes like a running joke where he keeps like, and we're just guessing when he's going to cut us off. We had a great panel of guests. Very special thanks to Lauren Kutch, Paula Gallo, James Tucker, and Alex Passione, a.k.a. Mike Rifkin. They all brought a little something to the table. So it was nice to have that. But it's good to have you back as we are, as you said, Joe, this is a very special can't-miss brunch. So, you know, what would you like to go through first?
Yeah. Well, I tweeted out earlier that this is a big one. It's going to be pretty eventful because we have a lot of stuff on tap. We'll do Brunch Madness at the beginning here, and then we'll get to, I think the surprise is going to come in around 8:10. And then 8:10, 8:15, and then from there we'll get into our fantasy football discussion, and we'll bring it home with a little bit of the MLB and give out a free bet for tomorrow as we usually do. Chris, the model has been killing it this last 2 weeks
baby.
Or so.
Yeah, the model's looking very
good. Ever since we made it public, really.
Honestly, yeah, maybe it's good juju, but I'm happy with the results. I'm happy. You know, for those of you who are following, great for you.
I know, Judd has been following religiously.
Yeah, Judd threw in a parlay on Saturday on three winners. And, I mean, last night, I think, I'm not sure if you had every bet I had, but I think I went 4-0-1. I think we had another 5-0 day a couple weeks ago that was capped off by a plus 200 run for the Royals. So,
yeah.
it's been very nice. And, you know, honestly, I still think we've been making good bets the whole time. They're starting to hit now. I don't even think we're getting like that lucky. I don't. You know, we're not really getting like bailouts or chokes or whatever. We're just, you know, I guess the regression has come, and I think you know it's only going to get better here from here for the model.
Yeah, it's not. I don't feel like a big correction's coming. I feel like this is the correction, and we've been on the right track the whole time. So it's nice. It's nice to be on the right side of all these bets, Chris. The AL East lead is shrinking. I guess we could get to that later on as well.
God.
Maybe by the end of the show, the Yanks will have a lead and the Sox are losing right now. And, Chris, a Yanks win and the Sox lost tonight, and it'll be down to six. There's no –
seven.
There's no part – well, it's six in the loss column. There's no piece of stress in you yet at this point?
No, I'm not worried.
Wow.
I mean, the Red Sox have had their second game losing streak of the season. This team is very
Chris
good.
No Chris Sale though to bail them out anymore.
Sale will come back. They're being precautionary. Eduardo Rodriguez should be back next week. To have him will be good, and you know then we could kind of get Velasquez and Brian Johnson out of the rotation, and they're fine. The hitting. I think we'll turn around a bit. They've been struggling the past few games. They're also facing the Indians, who are a very good team, as we know. And they are also only down one run right now to the Indians. So, I mean, Joe, who knows? By the time this night is over, it could be back to nine games. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, the Yankees, they still haven't made up much ground. The Yankees are playing very well. They've had a really weak schedule, but they're taking care of business. It's just the fact that ever since that four-game sweep, they've been pretty much on fire, and yet they've made up a game and a half. So I don't really see how they can make up eight games. I mean, it's not that it's impossible, but it's extremely unlikely that they'll make up eight games in the time allotted. I understand that the great equalizer would, of course, be those three games against the Red Sox at Yankee Stadium, then the three in Fenway. So it would be nice to have that this lead stay around eight, so that way once we get to the Yankee series, I don't really have to even think about it. You know, I would much rather have this team.
Well, the Yankees, won. They've been winning a lot, but they've actually needed this weak schedule because they have so many guys out right now. Didi's gone now. Chapman's gone. I'd feel a lot more optimistic if they were at full strength right now and they were in this position. But it's going to be tough for them to keep up this pace because I feel like, for the most part, once the schedule strengthens again, which it's not going to happen for another like 2 weeks or so, but once it does strengthen, they're going to be in trouble if they don't get some of their guys back.
Yeah, I think the fact that Judge is not still not quite there yet. There's not an exact date on his return. It's a little, alarming if you're a Yankee fan, just because, like you said, if this team is at full strength, they're probably, winning at a similar, if not the same, clip as the Red Sox. And if that's the case, then who knows? But I think the bigger issue is just that the Red Sox, even if they play 500 ball, they should be fine. And I think they'll be fine. They're going to get some easy opponents too. I know the Yankees have an early September West Coast trip coming up. So there is definitely a lot of
baseball. You're looking at the Yankees schedule. Chris, the fact that you know the Yankees schedule leads me to believe that there's a sliver of worry in your brain.
There's no worry. I will not pronounce the Yankees dead because they are not mathematically eliminated, and would it be foolish to pronounce a team dead until they are mathematically eliminated, but I'm not worried. And I actually, there was a part of me that I think it was when the Red Sox were losing to the Orioles like a week and a half ago in that game they won 19-12. They were losing, and I think the Yankees were winning, and I was like, fuck. Like, I thought I was done with this. Then the Yankees fell apart to the Rangers, and the Red Sox wound up rattling off 19 runs. And it's just like one of those nights, all of a sudden, it just sets the Yankees back so much. I mean, they've gained the game and a half, like I said. But, anytime the Yankees get a the Marlins can't seem to field today. Anytime the Yankees get a game that they should have had, it's just there's no margin for error, really, for them.
No, there's not. We'll see if they're able to keep this up. But they escaped last night pretty luckily to win that game. So we'll see if they – I'm worried about the hitting. We'll see if they can hit enough to keep themselves in it. All right, let's get to a little brunch madness here. Chris, this might have been the least eventful second round of brunch madness that we've ever had. I don't know if there was a matchup – It was every single – all right, so here's the first question that I'd like to ask present to you right now. Are we this good where we're able to predict the top 16 serials that everyone's going to agree on, or are people being way too swayed by these seeds?
I would say there's definitely the factor – if you factor in the seeding, because we've said it before, we've said it for Brunch Madness. A lot of people are looking, they may just be looking right at the seeds and it's like, oh, that's who I have to pick. And it very often that happens, but I don't know if we're that good. I would just say the serial bracket, at least, from when you compare the top half to the bottom half, or even the top, crust to the later 3/4, it's just not – it's not really much of a contest, I mean, there were
Chris,
only three upsets.
You had to cut it off
in
exactly
all the first
16. I mean, this means that we nailed each – even as clear-cut as it may be to differentiate certain serials, We had to pick each of the top 16 seeds correctly here, and we did it. I think that's a little incredible.
Yeah. Theoretically, if you think about it, we have the perfect Sweet 16 right now because we picked the seeds and we picked what we thought would happen. And, I think we did a good job, but I would just say that there are some of the lower serials that really just had no shot. So that was for the lack of first-round upsets. I mean, there was a 9, a 10, and an 11 that one. I believe it was Crave, Special K, and Apple Cinnamon Cheerios. And that was it. There were no upsets in the second round. And honestly, you know, in the Sweet 16, I see a lot more chalk. However, there are two matchups that I have my eyes on and that
All
I
right.
think are going to be very – very good. First matchup, let me pull it up here. I think the first matchup, no surprise, these are the 2-3 matchups. Fruity Pebbles versus Trix. I know you
mm-hmm.
are a bit of a, you know, you're not a huge fan of the Trix balls, as they call them.
That's
but,
correct.
I do think that they can give Fruity Pebbles a run for their money. And then Honey Bunches of Oats versus Captain Crunch. I mean,
yeah,
what is
going
to happen there? I really don't know. Because there is actually one more. I think the biggest matchup of them all is going to be Honey Nut Cheerios versus Frosted Flakes.
Yes,
because
that's
Frosted
the biggest
Flakes
one.
got you know the most support out of any 3-seed from the fans, from the public. And, you know, I don't know if Honey Nut Cheerios quite knows what they're up against. It's going to be a battle. It's going to be an all-out war. You could see that one going into overtime. Joey, we've never had a Brunch Madness go into overtime.
Never
I
had
mean,
an
it,
overtime
it's cer-
period yet.
It's certainly possible. So I'm very interested to see. I would say Frosted Flakes is probably a slight favorite right now.
Yeah, I think I said that before the tournament started, and I'm sticking to my guns, although I am very impressed by what Honey Nut Cheerios did to Count Chocula today. If you put that into perspective, what they're doing to Count Chocula today is pretty much exactly what they did to Honey Nut Clusters in the first round. I mean, they got 87% of the vote against the Clusters, and they're getting about 84%
yeah.
right now against against Count Chocula. So Honey Nut Cheerios with a strong outing. I think the cereal that I was least impressed by that won in the second round, I think was Lucky Charms. Only getting 68% of the vote, I thought Lucky Charms would get a greater public backing, and it doesn't look like people are flocking to the Charms, so that may leave the door open for Captain Crunch or Honey Bunches of Oats down the road. I don't think that Berry Kicks is going to give Lucky Charms too many problems in the Sweet 16. And then,
well,
we
said Lucky Charms had a very easy bracket, and they haven't really been tested yet.
Right, but I was surprised at least to see even Peanut Butter Crunch get as many votes as they did. And then Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I mean, what they're doing right now, this might be the best Brunch Madness first two rounds that we've ever seen. They've garnered 200 votes in the first two rounds. I don't think anyone's ever done that before. They've won.
They're just steamrolling
yeah,
their way
through. It was 90. They got 200 just on Instagram, and then more on Twitter. 92% in round two, and
mm-hmm.
round one was 95%. So yeah, they're absolutely destroying their competition. I don't think Cookie Crisp is going to show any fight there. And then, you know, I saw Fruity Pebbles getting some love in the brackets, but the way things are looking, I don't know if Fruity Pebbles is going to be able to stand a chance against Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Cinnamon Toast Crunch may be just the Villanova of this bracket.
Yeah, they're a high octane machine. I don't really see anybody overtaking them, at the very least in their own region. But we've got the other one seed, aside from Lucky Charms, you said, has had a very easy bracket, a very easy region. You know, the Crunch Berries are in danger. They're probably going to have to fend off Reese's Puffs. And then Frosted Mini Wheats is going to have to take on the winner of this Honey Nuts Cheerios Frosted Flakes battle. Although, Joe, if I was coaching Frosted Mini Wheats right now, I would tell them, do not sleep on Cocoa Puffs.
No,
because
that's a good
there
point.
I think Cocoa Puffs is gonna come to play. I don't know. I don't think they're gonna win, but I think they're gonna at least show up.
Okay. Yeah, I would actually agree with that, and I think I was surprised by Coco Puff's performance in the second round. They destroyed Honeycomb, and so yeah, I think that is that's decent advice that you're giving to the Frost and Miniweeds head coach. So Chris. Let's move on here, and
before we move on, I would be amiss to speak about. So on Saturday night, I actually did a bit of a cereal taste test, and I did it with Lauren, and I did it with my younger brother Sean, in which we picked cereals, did some taste testing, ranked them. I'll give you the list of cereals. You can probably guess who picked what. But some of them were not in the bracket. We had Blueberry Toast Crunch. We had Sprinkled Donut Crunch, which was a Crunchberry or a Captain Crunch branded cereal. We had Lucky Charms Frosted Flakes. That's one cereal, folks. We had Cracklin' Oat Bran. We had Rice Krispie Treat cereal. What else? Oh, and then I selected the classics, the Trix and the Applejacks. And Blueberry Toast Crunch was kind of the consensus favorite, so I wonder if people had tried that and it was in the bracket where it would have gone. The Rice Krispie Treats scored highly. But, Joe, I got to say, Cracklin' Oat Bran, it's damn
good.
Got
shafted?
I mean, it was...
It got shafted
with the seeding, then. It's like granola. It's like granola. So, like, it got shafted with the 16 seed. And, honestly, I mean... You say Cracklin' Oat Bran. I say Cracklin' Goat Bran. It was like I kept finding myself going back for more. And this is totally unbiased. I have to just, you know, with all the shit we gave Lauren, I have to at least, you know, give credit where credit is due. It is a very good cereal and one that, you know, I actually will probably choose to have again in the future.
Well, you gave her more shit than I did, so it's
well. Actually, and not only that, but I tried Cracklin' Oat Bran, but our good pal Stave Strong tried Cracklin' Oat Bran. He came over the morning after to shoot some scenes from the documentary, and we had him try the Cracklin' Oat Bran. He was a fan.
You know, Chris, it's interesting that you bring up Stave Strong because our next segment here. I'm going to actually turn it over to our up-and-coming producer and director of new documentary film, The Woat. Stave, welcome to The Brunch.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
For
the record, Chris had no idea that Stave was on the line here. So, Chris, I appreciate
Joe,
the smooth transition.
We've built such good chemistry over the years. Such good chemistry.
So, for those of you who don't know, Stave Strong has been producing this this documentary film, which is based on the 2017 fantasy football season, in which Chris had pretty much he had a ridiculous team, had an extra third, extra fourth round pick. Le'Veon Bell was his keeper in the 12th round, started the season 4-2, and then completely epically fell apart, and this was after a lot of shit talk as well. So we have Steve on the line today to basically discuss his documentary and his work, which will be coming out on Saturday. So Steve, welcome to the program, and give me a little bit of a synopsis about what we're going to be what we should be expecting this weekend.
First off, thank you so much for having me. It really is one of the biggest honors of my lifetime. The Woat is basically the story of someone who really wasn't born with much and managed to do even less with it. It really chronicles Chris Mulkey's 2017 season managing my cakes. Like you said, he built an amazing team through draft, keepers, midseason trades. It honestly was one of the best teams of all time, but he couldn't put it together. This 30 for 30 basically takes a close look at all the shortcomings throughout the season and that contributed to his disappointing ending.
So, Steve, what was your main inspiration for directing and producing the documentary? I mean, what made this turn into a film for you?
I mean, it was just really a story that needed to be told. I mean, you look at stories like Selma, Schindler's List. I mean, it's just one of those stories that the public needed to know about. It's seriously tough to really compare it to anything else that's happened in sports. I mean, Joe, I know you're not a huge fan of the NBA, but the only comparison I can really think is if, like, the season after the Warriors got Kevin Durant, they're supposed to win the title, and they somehow finished under 500 and missed the playoffs entirely.
Mm-hmm.
It was
yeah.
just a complete collapse that just needed to be documented.
I get that, and I think the world is going to thank you for this film coming out when it does indeed come out. How do you expect the public to receive this film when it is finally released?
I mean, there's a lot of talk and buzz about the documentary in Hollywood right now. I'm honestly thinking at least a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't want to jinx anything, but critics who have gotten an early viewing have already been talking Oscar nominations. You're going to laugh. You're going to cry. You may even get a little sexually aroused. I don't want to get my hopes up, but I'm really expecting big things.
So, all right. You know, you obviously have come to be very familiar with Chris's 2017 fantasy football season through all the research and all the filming that you have done. So let's go back and kind of dive into his season a little bit. What do you say is the defining moment of his collapse?
Oh, that is tough. Man.
So much to choose from.
It's honestly, like, even as we were filming it, and we're going through all the lines, like, we were reviewing something, and Chris was like, I honestly forgot that happened. Like, there was so much stuff that happened that contributed to it. If I had to pick one moment, it would have to be the loss to Jim. I mean, like, Jim's roster was absolute garbage. We would go over what his roster was. It was trash. He couldn't even take advantage of a 1-7 Jim. He wins that game, he makes the playoffs. And a lot of people forget about this. You take his consolation bracket scores and you move them to the playoffs, he wins the championship. Like, he moved his team dominated in the consolation round. So, like, basically, he beats Jim, he wins the championship. That's how, like, the line was there.
It was just the perfect storm of everything. Like, it really was just, like, a collection of talented players top to bottom that – refused to perform until I was no longer in it. And you had our champion, Alex Passione, who was essentially the opposite, where he had just a pile of shit on his team that managed to go off at every moment, especially in the clincher week 12 and then in the playoffs.
Of course, we have to deal with these excuses again from Chris. I feel like I'm back.
Like, non-stop excuses. That's all it's been throughout the even when we're filming. Non-stop.
Just to take everyone back to that Jim matchup, I have it pulled up in front of me right now. The final score of that matchup was 59.8 to 59.2. Actually, incredible to think that this matchup was basically the determinant of who won the championship last year. But Jim started Matt Ryan, Jonathan Stewart, Aaron Jones, Devin Funchess, Tyler Lockett, George Kittle, Cooper Kupp, and the Seahawks defense. His leading scorer was Matt Ryan. His lowest scorer was Jonathan Stewart, who had negative 1.9 points, and he still was able to knock Chris out of the playoffs. An incredible feat.
I'm getting physically ill just listening to that lineup right now.
Was this the week that AJ Green and Mike Evans both got
I don't want to give too many spoilers away, Chris.
Sorry.
You got to tune in Saturday to find out.
So, Steve, through the filming process, we know you learned a lot about Chris as the fantasy owner. What have you learned about Chris the person?
I mean, like you said, as a fantasy owner, honestly, one of the worst of all time. He definitely was a little unlucky in the process, but mostly just his ineptitude as a fantasy owner. As a person, though, learned that, one, he's an incredible voice actor. Like, he's completely in the wrong field right now in his life. Like, we filmed a lot of people in this documentary, and he got through all of his lines, like, in no time. Definitely a great actor. And honestly, he's a good sport for going along with all this. Having to live through the worst moment in your life over an 8-hour period of filming lines. Definitely not the easiest thing to do, and he was a good sport throughout.
All right, and finally, what was your favorite part of filming the documentary as a whole?
Man, I mean, it's tough to pick a favorite. Anytime you get to witness Chris naked in the shower eating ham, it's kind of tough to go against that. But honestly, I think it has to be filming Alex's lines. I've been in the business for over 20 years now. I've never witnessed a worse actor than him. I mean, he couldn't – his first round of filming, every single scene went to the blooper reel. It didn't – none of them made him to the final clip. We still have to record his lines on Friday. I'll give him credit. Like, he tried his best, but all of his scenes were in the blooper reel. I'd have to go with that.
An incredible job by you, Steve, for doing all the – you did a lot of work for this, and we're going to all get to see – the benefits on Saturday. There will be plenty of promotion going on the brunch account. So if you're listening to this interview, you've probably been teased enough, and you will be able to see the full video early next week. So, Steve, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it, and good luck filming the rest of the documentary. Have a good one, buddy.
Thank you so much. Have a good one, guys. See you.
Thanks, Steve.
So, Chris, thoughts on, you know, the fact that this thing's coming out now? I mean, it was a pipe dream, you know, a few short months ago, and this has now become a reality. And I saw a glimpse of the film, and it looks like it's very well produced. Are you going to be able to get through the whole thing?
Yeah, I think it'll be great. I think it'll be more so funny. I mean, honestly, when stuff like that happens to you, especially in fantasy football, you really, all you can do is laugh. It's just like Steve said, as we were going over the line, I would forget certain things that would happen and how ridiculous it would be. Like, we were recalling on Sunday how what swayed my, like, week 16 or week 11 matchup against Behringer was Chris Boswell hitting the longest field goal in Heinz Field history. So just stuff like, literally just like some of the greatest milestones in the NFL today were part of the were in this magical run to infamy that my team had. So it'll be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to seeing it, and hopefully I can get a little redemption this year.
I mean, here's the thing, Chris. I think a little bit of, now with the fact that this film is coming out now, I had to do a little bit of research on your career in the league, which has been going on for six seasons. Your career record, 33-39, 10th out of 14 owners in terms of winning percentage. Oriolo, 35-37.
Yeah, but in my defense, the years that I haven't done well, aside from last year, I've just put it completely in the tank, traded away all my players, and in the last half of the season generally did not win any games. So keep in mind, Joe, there is a championship mixed into there.
There's one championship that also is the only year out of the six that you've won a playoff game, though. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's all right. I mean, there was the first two years I tanked. The third year, I believe, I won the championship. The year before that, I think you beat me in the playoffs, and then after that, it's been a rough stretch. But like I said, you know, it's fantasy football. So I think that there is maybe a bit of regression coming my way, and I'm looking forward to this season. I'm really excited. I think it's going to be a lot of fun this year, and more than anything, I feel like, you know, last year with the NFL, just how it kind of went to shit. Speaking of shit, as I watched the Marlins swing at everything, I feel like I'm actually excited for football, and a big part of the reason is fantasy.
Yeah, I agree. I'm actually very into the fantasy this year. I feel like I know more than usual at this point. So let's talk a little bit about it in terms of our league. So our league is 12-team keeper, two keepers each, can't keep guys that were kept in the first two rounds, a lot of other rules. Big trade that just went down. First overall pick got moved. So, Chris, I mean, what's the – it seems like this year – And if you want to call in and talk about your fantasy situation, 818-688-6658, we'll talk about anything here. whether you want to talk about players, your draft spot, whatever. What's the strategy this year in our league? Because there's so many running backs kept, and there's so many guys with two running backs already. I mean, you're an example of one. Is the strategy in the first round going to be get that third running back, or do you go for the elite receiver?
Well, it is tough because I do like I'm a guy who likes to go for the top receivers. I feel like it's easier to find a running back, you know, maybe and take the place of an injured guy and be a top 10 guy than find the truly elite like Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, Odell Beckham, wide receiver. So I would say normally I would think that, but right now I feel like given the situation, maybe it's best to go best player available. It's very hard to say. The biggest thing is because, you know, obviously a lot of stuff happens in fantasy that we don't expect. A lot of players break out or fail to live up to expectations that we don't expect. But I think, you know, the biggest thing is injuries, which is impossible to predict. So I would say best player available, and if that player happens to be a running back and you have enough, then I would go with the running back because, like you said, there's just not as many studs this year. And perhaps we're shifting toward the time where stud running backs get a little more value than stud wide receivers because you just don't see as many bell cows in the league today.
So this is a situation that you may be in. Leonard Fournette or Dalvin Cook?
Right. That's one of the decisions that I have to make right now. That's a tough one. I would say for Fournette, he has a bit more upside, but the downside is that he is a little more risky because he's not on the best offense and he's a little injury prone. I know Cook just came off of an ACL tear, but he should be all right and ready to go. I'd like Cook as the safer pick, but if you're looking for upside, Fournette may be the way to go.
Are you buying the Latavius Murray stuff?
Not really. I mean, he wasn't really involved last year until Cook got hurt. And to be honest, I think Murray wasn't really that good last year. He just had the opportunity.
Yeah,
but when you look at how Jerick McKinnon performed, the Vikings didn't really have much of a choice. They couldn't give him the whole workload. They had to offset a bit of it with Murray, who did run well for his credit. I'm pretty sure Passione had Latavius Murray naturally. So honestly, if you're an NFL running back, just make Alex Passione draft pick you up or trade for you, and it's an automatic success.
Well, Passione's strategy is just get to the trade deadline at 500, sell your guys, and then pick up all the backups for the injured players, and you win the championship. It's worked 2 years in a row.
Right.
He had Kenyon Drake last year. He had Latavius Murray. I think 2 years ago he picked up Jordan Howard. I forgot
who's it
going to
be this
year. Got hurt was, but yeah, I mean that's just what he does. It's honestly if you're able to conserve that top waiver spot, you know, pick that top waiver spot in week 7 or whatever week after a major guy goes down could be just as valuable as making a huge trade at the deadline.
Yeah, it all really depends on timing, which is, you know, another thing that's impossible to predict. But it's going to be an interesting year. I feel like it is a bit of a weird year, especially, you know, now that this is the first year I believe that I am, you know, not in any standard leagues. I'm only in keeper leagues. So I'm, you know, working my way through that. You know, you're not really getting any sort of normal draft. There's always going to be guys who are, you know, taken, guys that you wouldn't expect. And I think that makes it more fun because then you're really managing a real team and you're strategizing, you know, the right way. Like the trades that happened today, there were picks involved for next year. So, you know, that kind of stuff I think is cool. I like how, you know, people start to get more creative because it makes it more realistic. And I think a league like ours, and I recommend everybody get into a league like that where you have so much, you know, consistency over year by year, you'll be able to see just how fun it is, and, you know, new things will come up each year, and the league will grow.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I don't know if I would, like, I don't know if I would enjoy a regular league at this point. Like, I'm so used to doing keeper leagues now that I don't. And if I was in multiple keeper leagues where it was this involved, where there's picks traded year after year, I don't know if I'd be able to do two. I just do this one, and my work league is a keeper league as well, but it doesn't involve picks. You can't trade picks. You can only keep players, and that's it. So it makes it a lot easier. But I do like the pick trading aspect. So let's get into these. We have a little bit more time to talk about these players in a little bit more detail. Are there any sleeper teams that you're targeting to get some good value players out of? I feel like for you, your strategy is usually go for the talent. I usually try to target the teams.
So I think that you make a great point there, Joe. And I think that was, you know, if there was something that outside of, you know, how a fluky fantasy that really doomed me last year was getting players who were not on good offenses. And honestly, it's hard because, you know, you don't really know completely going in, but I had AJ Green and eventually traded for Mike Evans, whom I essentially had to start every week because of who they were. And they were terrible. They torpedoed me, and I didn't really have a choice because the Tampa Bay offense was so bad. The Cincinnati offense was so bad. Maybe they weren't expected to be so bad coming into the season. But honestly, you know, and of course I had Kareem Hunt too, and the Chiefs wound up struggling down the stretch, and that doomed me as well. I had Tyreek Hill. But I think it is important, like you said, to go after teams with good offenses. I mean, New Orleans is one. Minnesota now with Kirk Cousins is one. Obviously, New England. I mean, you could probably pick some guys off the scrap heap, throw them into your flex, and get a little lucky. You know, a guy
what are you
like
thinking
James
about
White.
The New England running backs this year? Stay away.
I would avoid them. The only guy I would think maybe who is in a bad pick would be James White in one of the later rounds, maybe just because you know the it's a little it's really just more so it's so murky right now because of the injury situation. Sonny Michel and Rex Burkhead. Both are injured. Burkhead, who they're saying he's going to play with a tear in his knee the entire season.
I don't get how it's possible. Really, that's not going to last.
It doesn't really sound ideal, but I think I would probably avoid that and, you know, take the other Patriots players. Maybe take a shot at a receiver on the Patriots that no one's taken.
What are your thoughts on this Bears offense? I'm hearing some good things, and I'm hearing they might put up some fantasy points this year.
I would tread a little lightly with the Bears. I think that they definitely have improved, and I think Trubisky has improved as well. But I didn't love what I saw out of Mitch last year, and not that he can't be a good quarterback. I'm just not sure if this is the year. I think they may be a year away. And, you know, that combined with, you know, all the guys they brought in, they brought in Trey Burton, Allen Robinson, they drafted Anthony Miller, they have Tariq Cohen as a receiving back next to Jordan Howard. It seems like there are a lot of mouths to feed now. There's a new offense. I'm not quite sure what to expect. So I would probably steer a little bit clear of the Bears, at least in terms of, you know, I'm not going to reach for any Bears.
It's tough to talk to you about fantasy because we'll be drafting against each other in 3 days.
That is true. And we used to have our own team together in the Mega League, although we had to submit this year because of just how foolish a lot of the owners in the Mega League were. I mean, you know, you talk about dumb fantasy owners, folks. If you have some time, pull up a chair. We can tell you some stories. I know it is tough.
We also,
used
to mock
a lot of
our league draft, though, the week before the draft.
Yeah, the tough thing as well is that we know a handful of our friends who are in the league. They're listening to the brunch. So I don't really want to give away any of my strategies. You know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I feel that. All right, well, I'm looking forward to this one. I'm actually anticipating it more than usual, and
me too.
And
for some reason,
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good about it. I think you have in leagues like this, and I think this is kind of the this is maybe what has helped me turn the corner on preparing, at least. You can't go into ESPN and do their normal mock drafts when you have a keeper league where half the first round is kept. You know, you have to kind of mock it on your own.
Yeah, which is, I mean, again, it adds to it. I always say, like, you know, with a lot of, there's a lot of, you know, complaints that some people have with keeper leagues. I know there's been some complaints in our league, you know, in terms of the degree of difficulty. I say the harder the better, because then it really, you really do reward the better fantasy owners who kind of figure out the league and get ahead of the trends,
like Pat,
you know, ahead of time. So, exactly. So, like, if you're putting in the work, like you said, mock drafting, or putting in the work, however Passione puts in the work, I would assume, you know, maybe drinking some PBR. That's what you got to do. You have to, you know, work overtime if you want to succeed in fantasy football keeper leagues. And honestly, I mean, there is a lot of, we've talked about it before in the past, a lot of work productivity goes out the window during fantasy football season. And this is what it's all about.
I'll tell you what, I was mocking our draft today, and Shrum finishes his draft in, like, the ninth round. Like, he's done with important players in the ninth round. I'll tell you what.
That was kind of like me last year.
I know. I mean, I was just going to say, if the ultimate revenge, Chris, could be if Shrum messes this up this year, you get him right back with a 30 for 30 in 2019.
You know, I love the thought, Joe. But to be honest, I just don't know if I have it in me to, you know, kind of be like Steve and waste so much of my time on just useless, you know, shit.
Why is it a waste?
Well, I'm just saying, think about all the projects that Shrum has put his time into, all the statistical projects and models.
I think it's entertaining. He can make a
absolutely,
name for himself here.
Right, but that's the thing. He's got to figure out a way to monetize it. Similar to how we would like to monetize the model one day.
That's true. We're going to help him.
Speaking of the model,
because
the Marlins another loss for the Marlins. I mean, why do we even bother?
1-0 again, huh?
The only run the Yankees had was on a fly ball that. The guy, they had a man on first, and on a fly ball, the guy dove in his glove, bounced out, Hicks scored from first. So, you know, just one of those, but that's all right.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about this MLB here, because we are now, we already talked about the Yanks and Sox a little bit, but we are now at the point where the playoff picture is starting to form. It's already formed, really. I mean, we know who's going to make it, basically, in the American League, with the exception of maybe the second wild card, but that National League is getting real hairy. The Dodgers, as it stands right now, are not even in the playoffs. And right now, the division leaders are the Cubs, Braves, and Diamondbacks. And don't look now, but the St. Louis Cardinals, after doing a Passione patented buy-sell, lead the wild card.
Yeah, they're sneaking right up there. I think, you know, when you have, I guess you could argue that, you know, on a day-to-day basis or week-to-week basis, when sports, I feel like, you know, maybe basketball is a little different, but for baseball and fantasy football, it can get a little fluky, and that's kind of what Passione, you know, I guess he called into the St. Louis front office and said, hey, here's what you do. You sell, and then if you suck, then it's fine because you sold, but if you do well, everyone's like, oh, look at the Cardinals now. And honestly, I'm like half serious when I'm speaking these words.
Honestly, I mean, it kind of works. They really the only guy they sold was Tommy Pham. They didn't buy much. They got a couple of relief pitchers from the Yanks. I think that's all. And now they just got Matt Adams. But this team has played unbelievable baseball ever since the trade deadline. They were, I think, 500, and now they're 13 games over, and they're in the lead for the wild card, and they're kind of pushing the Cubs now for the division. So the Brewers are kind of in the hot seat now because they're the ones that went all out, and they bought in the offseason, and then they bought again at the deadline. And the Brewers are sitting there now I think tied right now for the wild card. They're in a really precarious spot because if the Brewers don't produce a playoff berth this year, there's going to be a lot of question marks around them.
Right. It's very tough because, you know, when you do this stuff, it's very easy for a guy to get hot or the inverse to happen. And there's really not much you can do when that happens. Your hands are kind of tied. So it is kind of a crapshoot. As we say, the postseason itself is a crapshoot. I'm interested to see how I think the National League is kind of all over the place. So I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the National League shakes out. But the American League looks to be a bit interesting as well with the ALS.
Well, yeah, the West is what's making the American League interesting, and that's kind of spilling over into the wild card a bit. I mean, I suppose, you know, if the Yankees were to go on a real bad stretch here, the Yankees' playoff chances could be, well, I don't know if they wouldn't drop all the way out of the playoffs, but maybe they could be finding themselves playing on the road in the wild card game. They're only five games up on the second place wild card team, which is the Athletics right now, who are a game behind the Astros. So, I mean, the Astros and the A's are going to be battling it out the rest of the season. The Astros are so much better than the A's on paper, but it kind of like the Dodgers. The Astros and the Dodgers have not played well of late, and they're kind of costing themselves, playoff positioning right now. I think the Dodgers situation is more it's more concerning because they're actually not even in the playoffs at all. The Astros are just fighting to get in the division lead, but I don't want to play the Astros in the wild card game. I mean, can you imagine Astros wild card game?
Joe, it's what I go to bed at night pray for every single night. I mean, if you're a Red Sox fan, all you could ask for is to not have to go through both the Yankees and the Astros on the way to the World Series. And just the fact that the possibility, no offense to the Oakland A's who are on fire right now, but it's just simply, you know, I think it's as good as Cleveland is, as good as Oakland is, the Astros, the Red Sox, and the Yankees are the clear-cut three best teams in the AL. And the fact that one of them will not win a playoff series is kind of crazy.
Yeah, and the Yankees right now are four games up in the loss column on the Astros in the wild card. If the Astros were in the wild card, right now the Astros are in the lead in the division. The Yankees are five games up on the A's. So the Yankees still in decent positioning to hold that wild card game at home. And I think that home game is extremely important because, especially if it's the A's. Because if the Yankees, for either team, since they're on opposite ends of the coasts, and I think it would be worse for the Yankees because the Yankees have to go out to Oakland and then come back and play Boston, even if they won that game. That's rough. Whereas if the A's had to come to Yankee Stadium, it wouldn't be as bad because they'd stay and they'd just drive up to Boston. So I think that game being played out there would be concerning for the Yankees. So they want to avoid that at all costs. The Indians, 13.5 up. No problems there. And I had them over 94.5 for their season win total. And I thought that was a lost cause mid-season. But at this point, I guess they could get there, right? I mean, how many games are left here? 73 and 52. 125. So there's 37 games left. And they need to win 22 and 15. That's doable. Chris, we got life.
That's okay, Joe. I'm good. I'm fine focusing on the bets for the remainder of the August and September. You know, that's okay. I'm not really interested in having this be much of a race. I'd rather it not.
I'm not saying race. I'm saying I have the Indians over 94.5 wins.
Okay.
The other tight race is the NL East right now, and the Phillies are kind of blowing it right now. They just had a 4-1 lead and blew it. I think the Braves are going to end up winning that division. I bet them. I know you bet the Dodgers, so let's talk quickly about those two divisions.
I bet
we'll
the Dodgers
up the MLB.
To win the pennant.
Okay.
Was that they were the best team. They would ultimately, you know, at least avoid the wild card game, which is not a guarantee right now. And but it's a little concerning. I think as long as they can win that division, they'll be okay, because I still think they're better than the Cubs. I know the Cubs got Daniel Murphy today, but that rotation for Chicago is just not good, and I think it's going to show up, you know, in the playoffs. I mean, we bet on the Tigers last night and tonight. Tigers are facing Leicester tonight. They're not having a ton of success right now, but, you know, it's also the Detroit Tigers. Once the Dodgers and once the Braves and once the Phillies get to lick their chops on John Lester and Jose Quintana and Yu Darvish now not coming back, I think that Chicago is going to have a tougher time than people expect. I really do think that some of these pitchers like Quintana, like Lester, they've had such successful storied careers that it kind of masks their, you know, their downfall, and people forget, you know, when they start to decline, you know, it doesn't seem real.
Lester's not good at all. He's
right.
He's done.
He's lost it.
Yeah. So I think you're right. I mean, if it was up to me, the Dodgers are the best team in the National League, like, hands down. And if they don't make the playoffs this year, there can't be enough bad things said about that team. And Dave Roberts will not last the offseason, in my opinion, if they don't make the playoffs this year. It is inexcusable that they're not even in a playoff spot right now. They're 67-60, and they have the highest payroll in baseball by far. In my opinion, the best lineup and pitching staff in the National League, and somehow they're finding ways to lose games. There's going to be a lot of heat on the Dodgers if they do not come through and make the playoffs, or even if they make the wild card game and lose. They're in a real bad situation right now, so they better get their act together with 40-some-odd games to go if they want to get into the postseason. And I think the Braves are going to win the East. So, I mean, let's run through real quick. Who's your 10 playoff teams?
I've got Boston winning the AL East. I have the Indians, obviously. I'm going to say Houston holds on in the AL West, and I think Oakland will travel to the Yankees, the Yankee Stadium, in the beginning of October to face the Yanks in the wild card game. And I think, you know, Seattle has had a decent season. I think they've overachieved a bit, but I do think that, you know, at the very least, they have had a solid season. They're 17 games over 500, and they're not really that close to the playoff spot, so that's tough for the Mariners, a team that hasn't been in the playoffs in a long time. I'm going to say the Braves, like you said, I think the Braves are the division, the Cubs got it. I'm going to hang in there with the Dodgers. I think they're going to make a run here. And then I think my two wild card teams will be Milwaukee and Arizona. And I think
all right,
Phillies just miss it.
I think, to be honest, if the Cardinals bullpen was just a little bit better, I think there'd be a legit shot the Cardinals can make could win this division, because you look at their rotation, it's not bad. Their lineup is really good. I think they have. It's tough. It's going to be tough because they're still right now four back in the loss column, and their bullpen really isn't very good. But and now Ozuna just hit the DL as well. But I mean,
yeah.
I was just looking at their, you know, with their rotation has kind of taken a hit, although Waka is on his way back. Weaver just didn't have the year he was supposed to have. They're a little bit banged up in the rotation. I don't think they'll get there. I think the Cubs win the Central. So let me run back through the whole thing. I got the same AL as you. I think the Astros hold on and the Yanks play the A's. In the NL, I think the Braves hold on, the Cubs hold on. I think the Diamondbacks are going to win the West. They're four up right now in the loss column on the Dodgers. And, like, the Diamondbacks are a good team. I think the Rockies are a little fake in that second spot, but I think the Diamondbacks are a legitimate good team. The Diamondbacks have two ace-caliber pitchers in Greinke and Corbin. I think Corbin's even a little better. And then, you know, the back end of the rotation has been pretty damn good as well, with Robbie Ray, Zach Gonley, and Buchholz has been real nice. And their lineup has a lot of flexibility. They're able to get Souza in there against lefties, and they got John Jay as a platoon. Peralta is having a tremendous year. They got a three-man platoon going in the infield with Ahmed, Marte, and Descalso, and a platoon behind the plate as well. I like the flexibility on the Diamondbacks. I really do think they're going to win the division. And then if you go to the wild card, it's it's going to be tough for me to say that the Dodgers don't get in. I think Cardinals-Dodgers in the wild card game.
Wow. Okay. So we have totally different ones, although we do both have Dodgers and Diamondbacks in the playoffs. And you know, I know that the Nationals traded Daniel Murphy, but there is still a good crop of teams out there that are just waiting along there. I mean, the Nationals obviously are kind of
Mets
giving up, I guess, but the Mets. But I mean, you know, if you we were talking about neither of us have the Phillies, neither of us have the Rockies. Pittsburgh has surprised this year, although I'm not sure it's that what their success has been super real. And then, you know, the Brewers, like you said, or like I said, I think they got a shot. But if you say they don't get in, another team that is in trouble if they don't get in, and a team that, you know, has a lot of talent, but really just no rotation. I mean, we saw a good start from Freddy Peralta today, but that was against the Reds AAA lineup. And it's, you know, if that's your best guy, you're in a bit of trouble in Milwaukee.
Yeah. All right. So let's get to tomorrow in the MLB. What's going to be our best bet to give out for tomorrow? I'm pulling up the lines right now. It's so hard for me to not just give Mets first five. I mean, I don't get how they keep making DeGrom so affordable.
Yeah, I have to say we've been betting on DeGrom more than I ever expected. And honestly, the strange thing about the fact that the betting that we've had on DeGrom has been, you know, the fact that we started betting on him after he kind of established himself as the best pitcher in baseball this year, you could say.
Yeah, and I think the thing has been the Mets have started to hit a little bit more lately, so we could kind of rely on them to score him a few runs. They are facing Bumgarner tomorrow. But, I mean, if this first five is anywhere lower than 150, 155, that's the one I'm giving out. You can give out a different one if you want, but I can't not bet on DeGrom at this point.
Yeah, I think that right now the Padres line, if you may have missed it, plus 150 it's at right now. If you could get it a little better, maybe plus 155, I would like that as a solid bet. You know, I think Lucchesi has been pretty good this year, and the Padres, they've started to come alive a little bit. And then another one
they
you can wait for tomorrow.
Way better than righties.
Yeah, yes. And I think another one you can wait. You'll have to wait until tomorrow, but I think there should be some value. I do kind of like the Reds' first five. I think they should have their full lineup in. They didn't have it today, and they kind of hung in there with the Brewers, although scoring zero runs, I guess you can't really say, is hanging in there. But I'm not quite sure that they get it done against Cole Hamels, but at probably plus 200 value, I think it's a good bet.
Yeah, DeSclafani's been excellent his last four or five starts. So if you're going to bet the Reds, he's one of the guys you probably want to bet. Cole Hamels is also
A lot of the value that we've found, you know, on some of these bets has been pitchers that the market has not quite understood that they're actually good, and we've kind of been ahead of the curve, and I think that's a big thing for the model. I mean, you've got DeSclafani is another one is one of those guys. I can't think of too many off the top of my head right now who we've been betting on a lot this year, but you know, there are those guys where you kind of understand they're good or they're bad before they're everyone else is. That's where you get the value.
Yeah. And I'm starting to kind of shift my focus now. If we're talking a little betting for the guys that are looking to bet in the MLB the rest of the year, kind of starting to shift my focus when I analyze these pitchers to what they've done, you know, last 2 months, since the All-Star break. Because pitchers kind of – the season is – it's a long season. And sometimes the pitchers find something midway through the year – and turn things around. There's been plenty of cases of that. And I think right now, the case with, if we keep using DeSclafani as a good example, came off a major surgery. He's been injury prone his whole career. But ever since the last maybe month or so, he seems to have gotten his full strength back. And you could see the results have changed. And it's not just giving up one run or two runs or zero runs in a game. Look at the strikeouts and the walks. Look at the whiffs. Look at the pitcher's velocity. If you see those things going in the right direction, it's usually a good sign.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, if you're a little confused as to, you know, who you should be picking or who you should be kind of trying to get ahead of the curve for there, you got the model in your corner right now, folks.
All right, that'll do for the Sports Brunch. Have a great week. We'll see you all next week, and have a good one.